The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour, sponsored by AIB. We've an end of show best of. Conor and Conan are here as usual. We're coming on the Wednesday because, listen, a lot of you are going to be on the sauce. You're probably on the sauce already and you're not listening on the commutes, but we'll get you on Wednesday rather than Thursday this week. Before we start into the best of, lads, a few bits and pieces that we loved throughout the year. I want to just give Moorfield a mention because we were all watching this last Sunday and it's the most unbelievable comeback maybe I've ever seen. And, you know, 2 minutes, 7 minutes left, or 6 points down. And, you know, when the clock starts ticking in, there was 2 minutes of normal time. Normal time, 7 minutes, is much easier than 5 minutes of added time because you're in panic stations with the 5 minutes of injury time. It's usually the attacking team trying to win it back, losing their minds, rather than the defending team losing their minds. You can frustrate the team trying to come back. Lomans lost their minds. Moorfield didn't lose their minds. They got stronger and stronger, led by Ronan Sweeney. And like, he's 37, lads. Like, I've played against him loads of times. He's not far off my age, and to put in a performance like that, he's absolutely flying it. Never threw in the towel. And do you know what? We moved the podcast this year to Thursdays as preview. But when you see some of those club games at the weekend, I think after the championship next year, we'll just keep the Monday going rather than that would inspire you to say, we need to do a podcast tomorrow, you know, and you need to be at some of these club games. And I think that's what we'll do next year after September, move the podcast from Thursday until Sunday. One other quick point before we move into the best of is we spoke in the podcast last week about the Tyrone ladies footballers having to pay Garvahi 13,000 or something for renting the property, and we were wondering about why the LGFA wasn't in under the GAA umbrella and why they have to pay these rents and it seems so unfair. And I got some information that Liam O'Neill actually tried to offer the LGFA to come in under the GAA umbrella, and they met about it and the LGFA refused. They didn't want to be part of the GAA and they said no to Liam O'Neill. And not only did they say no to him, there was a little bit of hostility in the meeting. And I got this from someone who was in the meeting, and my kind of sympathy for the LGFA now, who have to pay rent to the GAA, is completely gone out the window now. They don't want to be part of the GAA, which I find incredible considering the funding that they could receive and the free facilities. They don't have a pot to piss in. They have no pitches, they have no dressing rooms, they have no nothing, but they don't want to come in. They're playing GAA codes, but they don't want to be governed by the GAA. I find it absolutely bizarre, and that's the kind of answer that we didn't have last week. And you know, you have to pay your rent now.
Yeah. And the unfortunate thing about this is that it's the woman who you're playing and travelling to training. Like, they're the ones getting affected by it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm with you now as well. Like, if they're not going to want to come under the GAA umbrella, then yes, pay your rent. It's not your facility. But it's really unfortunate for, say, our sisters or like,
yeah,
the people
it's
that
not
we know
the players' problem here. This is the governing body. These are the leaders of the LGFA who don't want to be recognised. I'm not saying this is the players or even supporters or anything,
because they're just the same as us. Like, they've come into a club and they've trained up in that club, and now all of a sudden they're paying for these facilities. So I think if the LGFA want to go down this route, they need to make sure that they're paying for it and it's not coming out of the Gares' pockets who are going there.
Exactly, and where they're getting their funding from, because the games aren't well supported. Obviously the final was brilliant and that was great to see, but up until then, like, I mean, think of the security they'd have if they were under the GAA governance. Like, it doesn't make any sense why they wouldn't for the future of the game. They're playing GAA like rules and codes. They're all GAA people, they're members, but they don't want to be under, they don't want to be seen as, you know, governed by the GAA. I think that they should, and I think this idea that they have to pay GAA clubs rent, I think it's stupid on their part, and I think they need to maybe row back a little bit on this hard stance. Maybe they want to stand on their own 2 feet. Yeah, but stand on your own 2 feet, why? Like, I just don't get it. Like, what are you benefiting from doing that? But anyways, listen, we want to get on with this best of show, lads, because a few different interviews during the year kind of covering some of the big talking points from the year and some of our favourite ones as well. We're going to start off with a real feel good story, and that's Galway winning the All-Ireland. And I went out to City West the day after that, and I caught up with the real colourful Johnny Glynn, who's a really, really enjoyable interviewee. We all know that. He drops F-bombs like they're going out of fashion. And I started off by asking him how he got on the night before.
Some crack, fucking, it was great crack actually, but I hadn't sunk in yet. You give it a few days in the beer and we'll regroup then, and then it might sink in, you know.
Must have been a surreal feeling when the final whistle went just after the the heartbreaking loss at the drawn match, and then the one, the 2015 final too.
When the final whistle went, it was just, it was class, and the best thing was, you see amount of Galway people there, like, and how happy everyone was. That was the best thing, you know.
Yeah,
like, fair enough, winning is great and everything, but at the end of the day, when you see the supporters, and it's so long since we won it, and yes, it was just that moment where you see everyone rowing away, roaring and shouting down, delighted.
Yeah,
that's why you play hurling, you know.
I know you probably wouldn't admit it in the lead up, but like, there was a lot of pressure on you as well, you know, to bloody break this 29 years. You know, were you feeling that, or how are you dealing with it?
Well, sure, look, at Waterford was, Waterford a long time too, like, so, like, if Waterford were to win yesterday, we'd be gutted, but you never begrudge them either, like, you know, the two of us wanted to win, and I suppose we didn't really look at that, like, there's no real pressure as such, you know, we're just looking at the game, like, you know, and that's kind of how it went, like, and we're happy enough we won it, you know.
Yeah, come here, talk to me about your whole routine this year, because we were talking on the podcast thinking Johnny Glynn is going to be commuting from New York thinking this was the craziest idea we've ever heard, but how did you manage coming back, and how long were you back for, and you weren't just over and back that often, were you?
Oh, well, let's say now, if you open the passport, I've been over
good few stamps.
Yeah, Jason, there's run out of room now at this stage, but I know, look, it worked out. People have said it's tough going, whatever. It's not really. It's 4 or 5 hours, and that's all it is. Like,
yeah.
You want to put on.
But how did you manage the fitness over there and all when you're there on your own?
I trained away with teams and stuff, and I suppose this lad there from Longford, we're involved in a team together, and he was always on to me and helping me out, and Jerry Fox is his name, and I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite, like, and you know, a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit and staying fit, like, that way. Now, fair enough, I'd never be as fit as match day or whatever, but, like, when I came back then for the few months, I suppose I got fit in, you know, properly anyway.
Properly match fit. And were you surprised when you were given the starter's jersey for the final? Were you expecting it?
You never expect anything. Like, I'd be always saying, make the 26 now, you know, but, like, at the end of the day, no one goes to train to not try and play, you know, everyone tries hard and goes, and I was lucky enough to get the nod, but sure, like, it worked out. Like, I went in to go wrestling with a lad for a while anyway, and, but, like, when you think of Niall Burke came on and won the game for us, like, you know, and, like, I probably wouldn't have a medal today only for him, you know.
Yeah, no, well, they made a huge impact, and you made a big impact when you come on against Tipperary in the semi-final as well. Like, I mean, it's about not putting a face on you when you're not starting, I suppose. That's the difficult thing.
Sure, like, you don't go train your whole off for months and then be pissed off when you're not starting. Or, you know, like, there was a panel of 36 there, and 1 to 36, no matter who it was, everyone wanted to win the game, and whatever you had to do, whatever your job was to do it, that's the way it was, like, you know.
How did you find it in there wrestling with Coughlin and then Tadhg DeBurcke in front of you? Like, I mean, you got a few assists in the first half, but I'm sure it's frustrating, you know, being double marked like that.
It is, but sure, like, let's not know, I love wrestling, like, rather than running around the place, you know, like, so I don't mind. It was grand, actually. It was actually a pure finish. It kept DeBurcke back tight, back towards the goal, I suppose, not letting him go up the pitch and try and pick off pints. I'm sure the fullback wants to go wrestling. I said, so I'm sure we go wrestling for the day. I didn't mind too much, you know.
But that was a great tactic, really, that if they're going to put you in there, you can wrestle with your man, and DeBurcke has to cover you. So then there's other lads all getting, you know, he can only cover one.
Well, like,
so,
sure.
Like, I mean, was that the game plan?
Well, there was never a game. The game plan was to win the match. And sure, like, Johnny Glynn's not going to score 10 points here. But I'll work my hole off for as long as I'm in there, you know. And that was the way I seen it. And I said, whoever I'm on, I'm going to make him pure torture for him the while I was in there. Now, he made it twice as torture for me too, like, but So look, we won the game, and fuck it, it's good to win it.
Yeah, no, it's great to win it. What's the plan now? When are you going back to New York? Or
whenever,
could be gone AWOL here.
Whenever the hangover and depression hits me, and then say, oh, fuck, I better go back.
You have the week off work anyways, I'm sure.
I'll probably head back in, towards the end of the week. I'll see how it goes. I'll be back Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it is, you know. I'll see how it goes. Sure. Okay. When the drink is done here, it's only starting out there. So
you know. Kavir, what's the plan for the future with you? Like, will you be back full-time next year?
No, you don't know. We're 29 years waiting for this now, and I don't even be worrying about next month or my next year, you know.
But this kind of taste of the All-Ireland would make you want to come back next year to try and retain it, I'm sure.
You never want to miss this, for sure. If I was over there, like, there's a fact, like, if they're in the All-Ireland, I'd be the first man above in the whole stand rolling on, like, because I know the effort that goes in. And look, regarding next year, I haven't a clue what's going to happen fucking next week, you know. So I'm just happy to be here, and we won this race, and that's the way it is.
Yeah. Well, listen, congratulations, and thanks for talking.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
If every interviewee was like Johnny Glynn, lads, we would have a very, very entertaining show every week. There's no doubt about it. He's a brilliant player. He had a really weird year where he's coming over and back from New York, as he was explaining there. He's off the cuff. I won't turn into a schlob anyways. I'm not the kind of lad that eats shite. Like, you just don't get that enough, lads.
Yeah, I'm not sure what my favourite highlight of that interview was. Where it was, don't be the player who goes off and eats a hip of shite beer. Was it, I do love wrestling, the pure fight, or whether it was, I'll work my hole off for as long as I'm in there. I mean, geez, where else are you going to get that? He's absolutely brilliant.
Coughlin really kind of was barking up the wrong tree going wrestling with Johnny Glynn. I think that's what we kind of learned from that interview.
You had a good term for him, Willie. As pure as a driven snow, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, that is just a man coming in and telling you exactly what's on his mind there and then.
Yeah, and you weren't on the Hurling Podcast, lads, because we discussed this all year. Like, Johnny Glynn was commuting from New York home to Galway, and we were saying, like, this can't work in a dynamic of a team where everybody else is training hard. Nobody really knows what Johnny Glynn's doing over there. Then he's coming back, he might play a game, do a week's training, and then he's gone again and coming back. And we're like, it's fair enough analysis to say this might be a little bit kind of toxic for a squad. Yeah. They might resent, some players might resent him even getting an opportunity, but like, it obviously didn't have any. I'm not saying it's best practice to have players on your squad in New York, but it didn't seem to bother Galway.
I don't know what it. I know he said at the end of the interview there that he doesn't know what he's doing next year, but I don't know, could it work next year with the way that the championship is being structured? If Galway are going to have five games in Leinster as the round robin, could you genuinely see Johnny Glynn first of all coming back every week, every 2 weeks to play that? And if he didn't, how that would go down with the rest of the squad if he's suddenly thrown in for the business end. So yeah, we'll have to wait to see what Johnny says, but I'm sure if you asked him, he'll be pure upfront about it anyway.
Would you want to keep doing it, like, especially after you've won the All-Ireland?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they're on the cusp of this magical thing. Well, obviously it will be magical to do it again, but yeah, how could you be bothered to do it again for a second year? Like, Kevin Cassidy used to always say about Jim McGuinness's training, like, he could only do it for 1 year, could never have done it for more. Of course he wanted to do it then for more, but at the time it's like, this is too much. Johnny Glynn must be thinking, could I be bothered to keep coming back to New York?
Well, in fairness, Conor makes a good point there. He won't be able, because like, there was the 4 week gaps there where he could kind of play around with that, but he won't be able from now on. So yeah, we'd love if he comes back, because he's not only a brilliant player, but he's great crack as well, and he's a really big character in the GAA. Right, another controversy the biggest controversy really to hit the GAA this year, which maybe turned out to be a little bit of a storm in a teacup, was the Brendan O'Sullivan whole saga. He failed a routines drugs test. We had Ewan McKenna on the show, and this was before Sport Ireland ruled that it was a contaminated, they agreed with Brendan O'Sullivan that it was a contaminated substance. So here's Ewan.
I think to assign guilt to Brendan O'Sullivan is wrong, but I think also to assign innocence without the fact is completely wrong and naive. And overall, in an overriding sense, in terms of the GAA, to go, that's not our culture. I mean, I think that's bullshit. Dick Clarkin wrote in his column during the week, he said, for what is largely a skill-based game with little or no significant financial benefits, the GAA will be largely protected from the incentives to dope that are prevalent elsewhere. Now, I've heard this argument over and over again. It's based on two things. It's a skill-based game. Well, I'll take you to tennis, for example. It's also a skill-based game where upper body strength gives major advantages, where there's a need for huge endurance, explosive bursts. Fatigue is an issue there as well.
Yeah, recovery is probably their biggest reason for taking performance enhancers, because, like, I mean, you could have a five-setter and then the very next day have another five-setter.
Well, stamina can equal EPO, strength can be anabolic steroids, recovery can equal testosterone, agility can equal stimulus.
This is the thing though, Ewan, there's no, like, nobody's been copped for any of this.
No, you see, we're not saying this is the case, we're saying it might be the case, and it's worth looking into. If there's nothing to see, that's great, there's no harm in offering us a look. But we know that the GEA has shifted radically in the last 10 years. You're seeing a completely different specimen of guy coming out in terms of shape, in terms of size, in terms of power. None of that is assuming guilt, but to assume innocence is just as bad as assuming guilt.
I'd assume innocence because I've been immersed in this culture for pretty much all my life, and I've been on these squads, and I've taken legal protein shake that was okayed by the doctor. I did the weights under Liam Kearns. I'd never done weights before, and my body transformed in only like maybe 10 weeks from my one rep max going to from 70 up to 100, a huge jump from doing weights three times per week and fixing my diet and taking this protein shake. Now, I think the idea that you would assume suspicion over players who get bigger when moving from an amateur era into a more professional era is absolutely outrageous.
It's not assuming it's suggesting.
It's being suspicious about them because they're bigger. So, like, it's madness. Like, it's like you have to have more of than this. Like, I mean, Paul Kimmage wrote a piece in the Independent talking about the size of the rugby players. You have to have more than that to be creating this narrative.
We have right now, over the last 2 years, there's been 88 in-competition GEA tests, 91 out-of-competition GEA tests, and 17 blood tests, as they only started last year. But that's a total of 196 tests in that period, and there have been two failures. That's 1.02% positive test rate. Now, that's far too small a sample size to offer conclusive proof that there's something going on here, absolutely. But when you've had positive test rate of above 1%, you can't just shrug the shoulders and say, ah, sure, lads are in the gym, sure, we're above that, we're this, that and the other. Again, that's not assuming guilt, but that number would suggest that this is something we should be looking at.
Yeah, well, just to cut you off on that now, because Brendan O'Sullivan shouldn't be thrown into that category, because into the gym category, because he took a stimulant. Like, I mean, it's of no benefit to him lifting weights. Like, I mean, he took a stimulant. You could argue that the Monaghan fella, that might work, that might apply to him, but I don't see how that applies to, if you're talking about gym culture, then we only have one failure that might point towards that.
But have you seen the case file? I haven't, and I can't assume guilt or innocence until I see the case file from Sport Ireland. You haven't seen it yet, you're assuming innocence.
Well, I know he took a stimulant.
We know he took a stimulant, yeah, and we know he said it was a contaminated supplement. We don't know what the contaminated supplement was. We don't know any of the details of how this has been gone about yet. And I wouldn't call a guy guilty or innocent until I see the facts. All I know is the dates he served as a suspension. I know what he took in terms of the stimulant, but not what it came from. And that's about it. I mean, I can't say he's guilty or innocent without that. All I know is he failed a test. But what people in the GA are saying, without seeing any evidence more than the tiny little fraction that's out there, is, he did nothing.
Yeah.
We don't know that.
Then again, you know, the doping brigade, which I call them, the Kimmages and the Ross Tuckers, who tweeted about 15 times yesterday talking about steroids, which has no relevance to this case whatsoever. But, like, again, it's creating this narrative around the GEA. And I'm not saying I'm right, Ewan. My instinct is that there's not a problem here. Paul Kimmage and Ross Tucker's instinct is guilty, guilty, because of the culture they're coming from and the sports they're coming from. Obviously, there's a middle ground here and we have to keep our eyes open. My instinct is to protect the player, because my instinct is that he didn't try to cheat, and what he took, from what we know about it, isn't massively different to a caffeine gel. So, like, I don't know, when you see the headlines, failing doping test, failing doping test, failing doping, it just creates, you know, a kind of story around Brendan O'Sullivan that he's a cheater, and I think that's a very unfair one to create.
Well, I think you're kind of shooting the messengers there. I mean, I think his own county board and the GAA have helped put him in this mess, because if he was, say, stupid, Okay, if he was stupid and went out and took this, he went away from his own team, he went away, bought his own stuff, despite the fact he was warned against it, despite the fact he knows what can happen. If he was merely stupid, the best way to clear his name is transparency.
Yeah, so we're kind of speculating there, myself and Ewan, without knowing that Sport Ireland actually investigated this and investigated, they tested the sample Brendan O'Sullivan used and they tested another unopened box of the same thing, and they came to the conclusion that this was contaminated. So he didn't do anything wrong outside of being stupid and going outside of the team kind of circle and getting his own stimulant. Again, this was a stimulant. It wasn't any anabolic steroid. It wasn't any sort of EPO or anything crazy like that. It was a stimulant, lads. Coffee is a stimulant. Just to put it into context, you're not getting any muscle benefits. It might make your mind a little bit more alert. You see all different rugby players, GA players taking these caffeine tablets. They're okay. But you take something that's not, that's on the banned list, it might be no stronger than a caffeine tablet. Do you no more harm? Suddenly you're a drugs cheat for this, and these are completely widely accepted. I thought that the Paul Kimmages, and I went on a right bloody rant on the podcast about this at the time, that the Ross Tuckers and all these fellas, the doping brigade as I call them, they're desperate for doping stories, and if that's your career, obviously you are desperate for doping stories. And this, they shone the light on the GEA without any real knowledge or background on the GEA, and thinks that they kind of moved the narrative from maybe cycling athletics into the GEA, and all the same questions were being asked, and there was talk about the governance of the GEA, you know, like you talk about the governance of the cycling, like the OCI, and all these same kind of conversations were being had around the GEA. And like I was thinking, like, this is not, stop making the same narrative when this is nowhere near the same kind of situation.
Yeah, I agree with you, Willie, in a sense. Like, we argued at the time about it, and I still don't think there's enough tests. Like, why not just have the test and show everyone that it's clean and let everyone keep that trust that we know that it's probably there, we've all been exposed to it and that, but especially to the outside world, like, you know, they need to know as well that this thing is clean. That's why no one likes cycling anymore, because of the whole culture there. Like, and it is a culture thing, and it's probably not here, but I still think there could be more tests, and there does have to be a line as well, whether or not, like, yeah, it's only a bit more than a caffeine tablet, there still has to be a line somewhere, I think. And ignorance shouldn't be a defence of it as well, so we just have to be careful and test more.
And like, I got some criticism at the time saying that Woolley's so naive to think that it wouldn't be a problem. I don't know. Like, I mean, there's this attitude that you're naive if you think it's not, but you're not naive if you think it's if you think it is. I think you're naive and uneducated about the GEA and the culture if you think this is a problem. I'm not naive or uneducated about that, because I've grown up in it and I've been around all these squads, and I don't think it is. And there's two different motivations for doping. I think the strongest one, there's one is financial. That's not really there in the GEA. But the biggest one, this is for competitors. This is for people who are desperate to win. There's not the motivation in GAA because you don't think the other teams are doing it. Like, I mean, if I thought Kildare or Dublin were doping and I was on the Leash squad, I'd be saying in the squad, lads, we need to start doing what they're doing. Like, because you want, like, forget about money and everything. You want to win. What's the point in competing if you're not going to win? But that motivation's not there. I don't see any motivation outside of maybe the odd individual who might be stupid, or, you know, it's not in the culture. And like, I know Ewan was saying he doesn't agree with that, but it's not. It's not, to the best of my knowledge, and you'll never stop the odd one or two. Say it like it's unregulated at club level. There's no tests, so like, I'm not stupid enough to think that there's a club player in some county who might have a few friends who juice up in the gym and might have taken something, and also might play a bit of senior or might play a bit of intermediate. Sure, you can't really stop that. Like, I mean, unless they bring it into club football, but at inter-county level.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's there, lads. Your whole reputation, your whole career could be gone. For what?
I think though, what you mentioned there about whether other inter-county teams are doing it and whether, you know, somebody on a county team thinks another team is getting an edge, I think Paul Kimmage tried to kind of feed into that. He was saying, like, wake up and smell the caffeine, because once the genie out of the bottle, it's not going to be taken back. Whereas you said, you know, we could be accused of being naive, but I genuinely don't think that culture exists. I think where this perception might kind of arise is where there's definitely been a rise in kind of gym culture in Ireland in the last maybe 10 or 15 years. And because individuals as opposed to teams are being exposed to maybe steroid use and stuff, I suppose there may be a perception that they might think that, well, if I kind of juice up, let's say, there's a chance it'll improve my prospects of getting on the inter-county team. But as Conn says, you know, with testing so far, there's only been very kind of, there was a Monaghan player last
three
year,
two
I think.
Years.
Yeah, yeah, Brendan O'Sullivan. So I think until there are kind of more prevalent examples, you can't tag the GAA with that brush.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like Kimmage, like, I mean, I criticised him at the start. Like, I mean, remember him asking Alan Brogan in an interview in The Independent, were Dublin doping, that he heard Dublin are doping. And like, Alan was just laughing. Like, I know Alan well, and we were talking about it on the phone. And like, I mean, this is just bizarre for us even to be, we were saying like, this is weird even to be talking about this. That's an issue. But I think he was on Matt Cooper or something. I was listening back to it, and he had said that, he got a phone call off somebody and that told him that Dublin were doping. Now, I don't know how he got away with saying something like that, because, like, I mean, if I was on the Dublin squad and, like, I was hearing this, like, it's almost libel. Like, I know he's saying, I got a phone call. He's putting that out there, that Dublin are doping. Like, I mean, I don't know how he thinks he can get away with saying that.
Especially,
he's not saying they were,
terror as he is.
Like, saying that somebody told him and then he met this person and he couldn't corroborate it. But, like, I mean, he says he couldn't corroborate it, but he's still putting this kind of thing, you know, floating this out there.
Stu Brawley stuff. I was talking to someone on the way to the shop.
I don't know how people can get away with saying stuff like that. But anyways, like I said, it turned out to be a storm in a teacup. There was a huge debate about it, because it was kind of in the silly season before the after the league and before the championship, and like, it just completely took off. But all these debates kind of went on before Sport Ireland released a statement that it was a contaminated substance. And like, really, what were we debating? Because they just put closure to the whole thing. Right, Conor, this one's for you, because we have to picture this scene, right? You can take you back to the All-Ireland semi-final. It's Mayo versus Kerry. Aidan O'Shea goes in for the throw-in, which he always does because he's very good at it. And then after a few minutes, Aidan O'Shea starts running back down into the full-back position. And all of Croke Park was just murmurs around. You hear these kind of murmurs, like, I mean, what is going on? The only person who predicted this was probably the dumbest pundit in the whole country, David Brady.
I think he slagged him the week before. Well.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it was just like, nobody really saw it coming because of the obviously the advantage of playing Aidan O'Shea and the form he had been in. It was like, they're never going to do this. It's just robbing Peter to pay Paul. He's no experience as a fullback. He's playing out of his skin in midfield around centre forward. He's leading them, driving them on to put him back in a position he's never played and rob them of that brilliance. It made no tactical sense to everybody except for
Stephen Rochford. David Brady on the day. Well, like most people will tell you, when I go into Croke Park, I'm a nervous wreck anyway. And then when you see Aidan O'Shea trotting back to Mark Kirandani, it was just like, oh my god. Then at half time, you're kind of thinking, this isn't going particularly well, surely they'll change it. And then they didn't, and then a kind of goal came out of him in the second half as well. But I suppose you kind of have to look at it then. Well, first of all, when I like, if you're a neutral watching this, I would have been like lapping it up. Oh my god, this is Aidan O'Shea and Kieran Donaghy going to head to head in All-Ireland semi-final. This is amazing.
I was getting angry watching it, just thinking, how stupid is this?
yeah, and then you have to deal then with the fallout that came afterwards. I mean, like, talk about what a ballsy decision this was by Stephen Rochford. Because at that stage, I know Mayo finished the season well and really butted up to Dublin in the final, but this is a semi-final. Mayo have been playing poorly, bar the replayed Roscommon game in the lead up to this game. Stephen Rochford was under a bit of pressure, and this comes less than the year after he changes his keepers for the replay of the All-Ireland final. So to make such a ballsy call, you know, fair play to him. And I think in the end, eventually, it was vindicated, although, you know, you can't really compare the first and second game because the circumstances were a bit different.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think you've summed it up fairly well there. So here's Aidan O'Shea. First, here's Stephen Rochford. And then second, it's Aidan O'Shea talking about that tactical move. Stephen, I don't know how long I have with you, so I'll get straight into the Aidan O'Shea decision to play fullback. Can you, like, I mean, I know he's drifted in there at times during games before, but to play him in such a big game for the whole game, what were the thoughts behind that?
Well, like, I suppose, you know, having not won the game, it's going to come under a lot of attention. But look, you know, I suppose we've seen Kieran Donaghy's threat since 2006 against Mayo, 2014. If you look at the two goals that Kerry have scored in the last two games, they've come directly off Kieran. He scored one, you know, played direct ball off him. Second, even, you know, their second goal themselves. So, like, we look to put in, you know, a physical presence there and somebody who could deal with that and had some familiarity in it. We're not... we don't have a line of 6'3" fullbacks that would have had other familiarity actually around playing there, and you know, it was something that we tried.
Yeah, does it have to be a 6'3" fullback, or can you just have a fella that kind of spoils him and, you know, gets under his skin? And
is a guy at 5'8" or 5'10" going to spoil a guy at 6'5"?
Maybe not. You know? But Philly McMahon can do it, you know, and he wouldn't be the tallest fella.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Rory O'Carroll had a bit to play in that as well, if you're going back to the 2015 final, and that was again a good big physical guy that can do that. And you know, look, you know, obviously he's going to come under the spotlight, I've no problem with that, but I thought you know, as regards how Aidan played and he dealt with the threat, I thought he did, you know, I thought he did quite well. And Kieran Donaghy, though, is a good footballer, so he was always going to win possessions, he was always going to try and be a link and a pivot for them. But look, I mean, it's something that we look at and see, you know, does it need improvement or does something else happen for next week?
He looked a little bit at sea to me. Like, I mean, he wasn't kind of matching Kieran's runs out beside him, he was almost like he was letting them off out in front. Was that an instruction to cover the D, or was it that Aidan just wasn't getting up right up beside him?
Well, I think, look, you know, I need to probably see those to get a better sort of idea on it. But I think if you go back to, you know, some of Kieran, you know, Kieran's a very smart player, so he, you know, he looked to pull you out of space, maybe leave Paul Gainey in behind. So there's, you know, there's, when you're coming up against that type of guy, you've got to be conscious around what's also happening around you. And maybe that, you know, sometimes in the threat when he was pulling away from goal, you know, you're trying to measure what's that level of threat further out the field than what it would be if he was winning primary possession, you know, inside the large fairly area.
Did you do much coaching with Aidan about how to play fullback? Because it is such a specialised position, and Donaghy's such a specialised full forward, and in such a big game, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, just to say, look, you're big, you've kind of played basketball, you can wrestle, you can match him physically. Like, I mean, there's a lot more involved in playing fullback than that.
Yeah, and I think, like, in fairness to the coaching team, we would have done a lot more thought than just asking Aidan to go in on Friday evening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we did some work. But again, you know, you're limited. We had 3 training sessions since the Roscommon game. And to be honest, Kieran Donaghy didn't take our total focus. We had a lot of things that we did right. We scored 213 today, yeah, from play. We had 15 of our 16 scores from play. You know, Lee brought us a little bit of different running power in that area of the field. So look, you know, when you draw the game or you lose a game, you know, we look at all aspects of it. But we're still in the battle.
So come here. I want to talk to you about the fullback thing. The conversation you had with Stephen, because I was talking to him and it was like, just the week of that game, it was thrown on you that you're going to be marking Donaghy. He's obviously a specialised full forward. So how did that week go?
Yeah, it was grand. Like, look, they were really flirting with the idea of playing somebody in there with a bit more height. I didn't think it was going to be me. But he came to me the weekend before the game and said, what do you think? I said, well, yeah, sound. They said, look, I think it could work. I think it might do what we need to win the game. That was all that mattered. I said, look, if you want me to do it, I'll give it a right rattle. I look forward to the challenge, and it was a challenge. Like, you don't go from playing full forward, midfield, or centre forward all your life to going back playing full back and thinking it's easy. You know, it's not going to be. And obviously, from a personal point of view, I prefer to be anywhere else but full back.
Yeah.
But you know, look, from our perspective, you know, when you look back on it, I think both Dave, the objective of it works. You know, people think it didn't, but the fact the first day we conceded 2 bad goals, totally irrelevant of me playing full back, and we would have won the game comfortably. And I think the second day we won the game comfortably by not conceding bad goals. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think it got most publicity probably because the form you were in out the field, you know, that kind of way that you had been influencing games so much out there, to lose that and then to put you into a position that you'd never played before. That's probably where the big surprise came.
Well, I don't know. Because I think, like, if you look at our forward line that day, I think we scored something crazy from play that day in the game. So I think, you know, I think there was a lot of rubbish written in the paper that week about taking me out of full back. And I think it might have been to try and get me out of there for a reason. And I think, you know, I'm glad that Stephen and the team stuck to their guns. And I think it worked the next day and worked the first day. We were happy with how it did.
It was actually weird the second day, because you've been dominating the game on Johnny Buckley, you're playing centre half back, and then you went back in full back, so you're really keeping him on their toes, guessing.
Well, yeah. Well, it was just the way the game, to be honest, it was just the way the game started. I think Tony Shoes said to me after the game, he goes, the fuck were you doing that? I was like, well, I said, like, things are going well up there. There's no point going back yet. I said, they haven't got the ball yet. So I said, we'll keep going. But no, it wasn't. It was, you know, I heard people thinking afterwards that it was by design. It was more the fact the way the game was playing. We seemed to have them pinned back in and things were going well. So we, I just waited until the opportunity to get back there and fit back in. And that's just how it really kind of panned out. It took us maybe 8 or 9 minutes to get back in there.
Right, okay. And, like, I mean, seeing the game from full back, has it given you a different perspective on, you know, the game in general?
That I don't want to play full back again, bad.
But even ball into forwards and, you know, the pressure out the field is so important because you can't give them easy, you know, if they've time on the ball, the quality of ball that goes in.
Yeah. You have probably a greater appreciation of how difficult it is to be a defender, especially in Croke Park. But I was just so, I suppose, focused on trying to do a job. You know, I know, you know, there wasn't any greater expectation of me, you know, helping off my man or anything like that. I was just trying and stop high ball into our square, and I think that, you know, that worked. But as I say, it can be a scary time at places when you see somebody like Dave Moore with the ball, who can do anything with the ball in his hand, and you're sitting one on one inside of the defence. You know, it can be a bit daunting at times.
Yeah, and Stephen Rochford kind of explained that whole situation really well. I was lucky in Croke Park after the game. He talked to me for about 10 minutes and he kind of wore his heart on his sleeve in that interview and explained it from kind of from his point of view, and it helped you to understand where he was coming from. And again, like, I mean, I think the headline on the paper the next day was the donkeys or whatever like this. Like,
it
was shocking stuff. But like, while I would have been critical of the decision, when he just explained it to you, like, in his own words and made me understand, I was kind of like, nah, maybe it's not. Like, I can totally see where he was coming from, and the Lee Keegan at centre forward where he was coming from. And, like, again, why can't managers just come out and be honest? And I'd say a lot of Mayo people listened to that interview and went, oh yeah, Rochford, we're onto something with Rochford.
Yeah, even because, like, going back a few years, even when Donaghy destroyed us down in Limerick and in Croke Park when he came on as a sub, all Mayo people after the game would have been, you know, putting forth theories like, why didn't he put Seamus O'Shea back there? Why didn't he put somebody big back there? And the same people would be saying, when he put Aidan O'Shea, what the hell is he doing putting Aidan O'Shea back there? Whereas the way he explained it, the logic made sense, even though the first day it possibly didn't work out. But I think as well, it shows kind of how selfless Aidan O'Shea was. Because, like, sometimes, and I think, like, completely wrong, Aidan O'Shea is made out to be this guy who's all about him, whereas he's the complete opposite. His work rate is amazing. He's very selfless, very much a team player. And for him to just react, there wasn't even a hint of there wasn't even a hint of him disagreeing with Stephen Rochford when he said no problem. And I think that reflects really well on Aidan as well.
Yeah, I think Kerry let them away with it. Like, at the reason, like, Donaghy took him to the cleaners. It could have been more in the first
game. Yeah, he shored it up a bit the second
day. Yeah, he won ball anyway. Like, it wasn't high ball, but he's a good player. Like, so I thought it was a little bit naive just to think that Donaghy, if you get a big man on him, that's it. You need a good defender on him first and foremost, and it was really good. But I thought Kerry should have been criticised mostly for not just giving every single ball to Donaghy, because he was winning every single ball. He should have been on half time going, what he's doing, Aidan O'Shea's marking me, give me the ball.
So I do
like Rochford, and that interview was class, and what he said about, I don't want to die wandering, and I liked it. It's not even rolling the dice. He's making calculated risks. He's thinking about, how can I win this game best?
He's brave.
And that was one that I didn't think was a great decision, but he's made a lot of good decisions. The Keegan one did pay off, which I didn't agree with at the time. But that freaked Kerry out as well. Like, and he does this constantly where all managers don't, and they do just peter out.
Just to finish up on this now, is that when Kieran Donaghy was on Sports Show Live, and you see, you never really think about this. Remember Kieran Donaghy says, remember that first ball Aidan O'Shea went up and punched and the whole crowd went mad?
Yeah.
Donaghy made the decision in his own head then, jeez, I don't want this to happen again, I'm going to move to the wings. Mm. And took him out of the complete danger place that he should have been. So, like, in a way, I don't think Rochford was going to think Kieran Donaghy was going to be overthinking this in his own head. But in a way, yes, he destroyed Aidan O'Shea on the ground, but he also got totally spooked out. And it was a crappy ball to him anyways. Yeah. It was an Aidan O'Shea ball. Yeah. Like, I was like, geez, Kieran, I would have given myself a little bit more time in there to really... But it worked in that point, as in it spooked Donaghy, and nobody really thought it would have spooked Donaghy into how much it did.
Would Eamon Fitzmaurice not have been a bit pissed off at that? I mean, they worked on a game plan for how long coming in, and then Donaghy, which, in fairness to him, he decides, this is the way I'm going to beat him, but I'm going against the tactics.
He'd be pissed pissed off about it, but why didn't Amos Fitzmaurice rectify it? Because anyone could see in Croke Park, Donaghy was hugging the touchline.
Yeah.
And like, sure, Fitzmaurice is just there, like, send Hassett in and say, here, get back in on the edge of that square. So he's at fault as well, like, you know.
Unless they just thought, because Donaghy was on a lot of ball, and they thought, this is grand, you know, because O'Shea kept backing off him and Donaghy won it and setting players up. Unless he just thought, we're still getting it in some way.
I suppose, there were. The few ones that he was winning on the ground maybe was enough for Fitzmaurice not to start changing it or whatever. But anyway, you can nearly do a full show based on this on this bloody one tactic.
It ended up in a draw.
But we had our first, our biggest ever GAR live show. It was in the Academy before the All-Ireland Final. We had Kieran McGeaney, Sean Cavanagh and Graham Geraghty. They were all on stage together, and as the conversation moved on, we started talking about the infamous 2006 International Rules game in Croke Park.
Yeah, come here, before I let you go, lads, because we're nearly out of time, I want to talk to you about 2006 International Rules, because you were all playing, right? And of course, Geraghty gets you all into a big row, which is very, very unlike Geraghty. So the story goes, Geraghty knees a fella in the head in the first game in Galway. So there's a lot of trash talking over and back throughout the week. The game starts, it kicks off. I was at the game, I was in the Cusack stand, and I remember looking down, you were getting really rough treatment. You started into the kind of wrestling. The Sean, you were over on the wing, you wanted no part of it.
I was you were like, holiday, that's it. Yeah, it was mad.
That
must have
been an unbelievable experience to be, like, I mean, you're nearly concerned about your safety. That game was getting out of control, no? Or are you just in the zone?
We played in Galway that time, and everybody afterwards was saying it was a real tame affair, and it was the hardest and most physical game I played in all the Aussie rules. They hit so hard, but it was all fair and shouldering and tackles to the ground. But the media went bananas saying that it was, what do you call it, was a real damp squib, but there was no hitting in it. And we were all going, we were in the scene, you know, the next day, like all of us in bits, like, and nobody could hit, like, and somebody ran into me. It was, what do you call the big fellow who was playing full forward?
Barry Hall.
Myself and Graham Canty were given the job of trying to double up on him, like, and it was like wrestling a freaking gorilla. he was massive, so he was.
How did that replay end up for you in Croke Park?
It was too wet that day. I didn't want to stay on, so it just
and you had your daddy Sean Boylan. Well, that's terrible rough stuff.
I just seen the video. I've never seen Sean Boylan lose in all my life. You're thinking up after the game when it was this to some of the manager of the Aussie team, but I suppose he was just disappointed his little baby got hurt, you know.
But what's it like in like that, lads? Because they were kicking off, right? Because the minute you ran down to your man, you were getting it. You were getting it verbally and you were getting hit, and then it was kicking off all over the field. So it was very obvious here, this is not kind of like going to be a normal game.
I nearly didn't get on the pitch because there was three of them waiting at the sideline for me. And I went to get on, he said, you know you're going to get it today, don't you? Whatever. And Paul Gavin just ran out through the middle of the room and get the fuck out of the way. I don't know if he even understood what he said. Like, but he just forced the whole lot out of it. And he says, there's a pair of jeans in it for you afterwards. Like,
it was actually funny because it was Aidan O'Matney and Paul Galvin. It all calmed down a little bit, and then O'Matney and Galvin kicked it all off again. Like, I was thinking, what are these lads doing?
Yeah.
I wouldn't blame them totally now. You know, in fairness, the Dazzies were given a fair bit too. Like.
Yeah, you can't stand down from that kind of thing. But I think, did you ended up wrestling with Barry Hall then, did you?
No, I was the captain, so it was. We had a chat, and I don't know. And I remember O'Mahony was one side of me and Gavin was the other, like, and the next thing the three of us were sitting beside each other on the sideline. It's the only game I've ever got sent off. And
so is it?
I wish I got sent off.
That was his first step into the management role, you know, sitting on the sideline having a look and see.
But no, it was, you know, the thing was out of hand at that sort of stage. Like, they didn't see anything wrong because there was no further punishment, like, in their own sport. Like, even, like, the game, like, you know, everybody used to talk about, like, oh, like, it was terrible that we couldn't beat them with a round ball. But we were playing Aussie rules with a round ball. Like, at the start, like, those games, we played all Aussie rules. Like, it was four bounces, you know, it was the wide thing, the tackle, which is totally alien to us. So people might think the opposite, but we don't engage in the tackle. We stand off. where their whole thing is, and we're at our safest when we're shooting. If you shoot or take a pass and somebody, what do you call it, hits you or pulls you to the ground, it's obviously a free kick. Where it's at that stage in Australian rules, that's where you're at your most vulnerable, and that's when they go for you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, we were missing shots, and people were sort of saying, like, you know, oh, like, or like, you know, Ireland, like, they're terrible, like, they should be better with a round ball. But when the rules were balanced and it became more GA rather than just Aussie rules with a round ball, like, you know, I think it sort of showed that, like, you know, we can live with them, like, no problem, like, in terms of fitness or strength. But, you know, it would be the same. Like, if you played, you know, Australian rugby and we decided to play with a round ball, let you kick it, like, that doesn't mean you're going to be able to beat them. Like.
Yeah, no, no, that's true. What do you remember of that incident, Graham? Because, like, I mean, you were knocked out and brought to hospital. So, like, I mean...
I seen it on TV about 3 weeks later. The most frightening thing about that was waking up in the back of an ambulance. I was looking out at Mocky Regan looking in at me. All right. Not a whole lot, just remember the tackle and then...
That was history. Did it turn you off it then? Like, would it kind of sicken you towards it?
Not really, no. Like, it's like, we all love playing it because it's, you know, it's aggressive, it's physical. But I think they took it over the top that time, you know. Is there any Australians here? No. Yeah. But, like, most Australian sports people, they take it very serious.
They're assholes, aren't they, in general?
They take it very serious. And then when they're... You know, when they're beaten,
they want to stereotype
their egos
them.
Get hurt, and then the physicality comes in then. But they were engaging and stuff off the ball and after the tackle and on the ground, which was totally illegal. But I looked at a clip of there the other day, and it's horrible. The referee's standing there looking at you, like, and you're getting the headbed off you, and he's standing there like, like David Coldrick from Leeds, like, was... And
I'm not allowed to talk about referees, so...
That was great, lads, because I was at that game and there was just so much going on. Like, I mean, my heart was racing watching it, as in, because you would have played against a lot of these lads and you're thinking one of these lads could get hurt here. And then you see Paul Galvin, Aidan O'Matney and these, and they've no fear in them, and they actually want to fight these big Australians who were out for blood that day and were completely out of order. Geraghty's brought off to the hospital. Like, they can all laugh about it now. And, like, there was some great stuff kind of in that little chat. I should have probably got into that. I should have started with that. Only started talking about other stuff. But, you know, it was just crazy. You hear McGeaney kind of talking about it as well, and the wrestling and stuff like that. That's what those live shows are all about, those kind of conversations.
Yeah, that's what the GA is all about. You have those stories. Like, I remember we were talking to Aidan O'Mahony after the show in Westport, and he just has so many stories about boys that he was boxing or wrestling with, and he just says it so throwaway. Like, so he came over, so hit him a dunt. And Australian rules stories are great as well when he gives you them. But I think he was showing pictures at the academy, and Sean Kavanagh was nowhere to be seen in any of these clips. Like, and he was sort of sitting there very embarrassed then, like, but no. Very good shoe, Willie, I'll hand it to you.
I specifically remember Sean Kavanagh. That was the funny thing about this, is that his man was holding on to him. Sean Kavanagh is not a dirty player, but I think, like, you know the Gooch has no interest in that game. I think Sean Kavanagh is like, here, I'm not getting involved in this. Like, I mean, I've kind of got too much important stuff on in the championship for this kind of nonsense. So Sean just kind of basically stood there letting his man hold him while all this was kicking off, and he's like, well, okay, that's alright.
And the Aussies had a massive physical advantage back then, and they weren't, I think Kieran McGeaney mentioned as well, they weren't bothered by the fact that if they did something wrong, they weren't going to be suspended like they are now. So it kind of allowed for a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Even a few days before that game, the Aussies were kind of winding up, saying that they were going to exact for revenge for Art. You know, they felt the narrative was that they had been physically dominated in Galway, so they were going to show what they were made of in Dublin. But McGeaney mentioned that. I remember that Galway game. I thought the exact same thing that everybody did, that it was a bit feeble. It did, like, especially what you'd been used to with the international rules. There didn't seem to be the same physicality, but... they made up for it in Dublin the week later.
Yeah, no, they definitely did. And that's obviously McGeaney's famous quote, if you want to box, say you want to box.
Yeah,
if you want to play football, say you want to play football. That's what he came out after it. There was a huge shock in the hurling championship, lads, in the Munster championship. Obviously, Tipperary were beaten in an absolute classic down in Thurles. They were shocked, defending all our champions. I went into the dressing room afterwards and I spoke with Michael Ryan, who was kind of obviously very disappointed. And we ended up arguing about media bans. But first I asked him if he was surprised at how good Cork were.
It was exactly as I expected coming out of Cork. Yeah, no, we know what their players are like. You know, like that forward line. You know, I suppose the new ones that we weren't too familiar with was Luke Mead and young Kingston. And, yeah. You know, but the other four, we don't have been around for years, and they're absolutely outstanding forwards. You know, their skill level was exceptional. But I thought the energy that they brought, particularly in that middle third, was the swing factor. And they certainly won that battle.
Yeah, they dragged your half back line all over the place. That's hugely such a launching pad for your game that they kind of disrupted that.
Yeah, we'd like them to sit and you know, fight for the puck outs man to man. But
yeah, Paddy didn't know whether to follow me around the place or whether to let him off or what to do.
Look, that's the game. Yeah. You know, that is the game. And I think they got all their... I think they imposed their will on the game. And, you know, credit Cork.
Yeah, has all this talk of... emulating Kilkenny been a distraction to you this year? Because you've been running a tight ship media-wise and you've not been allowing the lads to say anything, you know, and I see what you're trying to do. But, like, has it been seeping in, or how hard has it been to block out?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
But you didn't let Shamie talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
There's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
No, absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message, you know, and I think there's always an element of that. Look, you know, we're trying to run our show the best way we possibly can. You know, it's not our job, and with the greatest respect, it is not our job to fill print media or airwaves. That's your job.
No, I understand that.
Our job is to get these boys ready to play hurling.
And Michael, I can see why you did it as well, because one or two throwaway comments about this Kilkenny thing, because this was the narrative right throughout the league because you were performing so well. So I can see why running a tight ship would make sense.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I think you know, from what I've... I think that any comparisons between a Tipperary and a Kilkenny side, number one, we've our own identity, they've their own identity, they're very proud of their identity, and what a period of time they're after having over the last 15 years. We're still scraping to form our own identity and become relevant and, you know, achieve as much as we possibly can for our county. But that's where the comparisons start and stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think me and Michael Ryan were really going to agree on that one there, lads. Like, it was a media ban, but it wasn't a media ban, but Shamie Callan did a solo run, so it's hard to know what to actually believe. Obviously, Michael Ryan was a little bit pissed off. I don't think there was any doubt about that. But it was fairly obvious that Shamie Callan went to a media day and said that I'm not allowed to talk. And so did Richie Hogan, actually. So it wasn't just Michael Ryan. Geez, Kilkenny's media ban has gone out of control as well. Kilkenny and Tipperary were probably the big ones this year. Galway are probably fairly quiet as well. But Michael Ryan definitely take an exception to the fact that this was the case.
It's like, that's your biggest thing, just we weren't on the media ban. Ah, you were.
Yeah.
Ah, you were, Michael. I can see why he was taking it bad, though, because he just lost a match and then you're poking him then with his media ban thing, which... He's obviously...
But he said it was because he was at the launch of a Hurley. Why is that different from other media days?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he was making too much sense. And I didn't even start asking him about the media ban. I started asking him... I mentioned the media ban in the context of keeping a tight ship and, you know, this narrative that they were the new Kilkenny, and very hard to keep that out, you know, because Tipperary don't have a good record of defending an All-Ireland title. Suddenly to start the league well the next year, every All-Ireland champion is favourites next year. Suddenly there was talk about this dynasty and the new team to go and take over, and I'd say Michael Ryan was like, no, I don't want any of you speaking about this because you're going to be asked about this. And like, while I give out about media bans, I make exceptions for certain squads like Mayo this year, who just were being shafted right, left and centre. Everything that they said, it was being twisted, and I could understand them. So there's some media bans where you'd be like, the manager might need to take a little pull for a couple of months here.
Yeah. Why is it with Tipperary though, particularly, that they get held up as they're going to start a dynasty or this next golden generation? It was the same when they won, they eventually beat Kilkenny in 2010, and then they won an All-Ireland Under 21 final a week later, and they hammered, I think could have been Galway, and everybody's talking, oh, this Tipperary team is going to dominate for 5 years. It didn't happen. And then, you know, there's only a few years gone and people are making the same mistake. It's just not that easy. And then you'll see from, if you read Jackie Turrell's book, how well that talk of a golden generation in Tip goes down in Kilkenny. So I can maybe understand how paranoid that Michael Ryan is about.
Yeah, they were just playing so brilliantly, and like the full forward line of John McGrath, Shamie Callan and Bubbles, and like, I mean, they're blowing teams away, you know. They beat Wexford, put 5 goals past Wexford, who were playing a defensive team in the league semi-final, and like along with some impressive results of blowing out, they blew away Dublin in the first round. They were just blowing teams away, playing really impressively. You can understand maybe where it comes from with the calibre of player they have, but I don't know what's wrong with Kilkenny. They're just freaks of nature that you can come back, and Dublin are getting to that point in the football, you can come back the following year equally on that same pitch of motivation. Yeah. And I do think it's that both of their squads, as in that there's no player on the squad, on the team, comfortable in on the team, and because they're winning they want to be on the team. A lot of teams would have 12 guaranteed starters, 10, 11, and I think in some ways you need that in a way too. But the year after winning in All-Ireland, you can't feel comfortable, because if you start feeling comfortable, as in I was a leader last year, I kind of Jim Gavin and Brian Cody, they are so ruthless that you play 2 bad games, it doesn't matter who you are, and you're gone. That's an unbelievable quality of a management team, to identify who's dropped off a bit mentally in training, in matches, whatever way, identify it, drop them, explain to them why they're dropped, and have them hungry to come back in again. And like, that's why Cody and Jim Gavin are brilliant.
Yeah. As you said, you have to have the luxury of having a squad with good enough players.
They have a luxury. You have to say they do have a luxury in that, but then you have to manage that luxury.
And what was a media ban going to do though? Did you say you would understand? Like, because they play like, every county in Ireland is going to be lining up to take a shot at them anyway, with those players and that title behind them. Like,
I think it was because of this word of new Kilkenny, right? You could get someone on Bubbles, like Bubbles on the squad, who's maybe a bit of a loose cannon, and he might say, well, that's what we're trying to do. We think we can. And then the headlines are Tipperary want to match Kilkenny, and then Michael Ryan's pulling his hair out going, you know, so I can see maybe
the Munster Championship to get through.
Only because that was the whole talk during the league. And like, you know, I wouldn't maybe agree with a media ban all year, but I think Michael Ryan during that league, while that whole talk was going on, saying, lads, I don't want any talking because this is what they want you to say. You know, I can understand it. Yeah. While I don't agree with it, I'm sure there's lads on the squad that wouldn't fall into that trap and would be able to answer it properly, but it seemed to dominate the hurling league.
Oh, you just go out and earn a living like anybody else.
Can't believe I've just argued twice about media bans on the favour of media bans.
Media bans.
Anyways, lads, we'll move on from that, because Tiernan McCann, I think he was a real surprise packet on the show, because I don't know about you, but like, I mean, I kind of judged the book by his cover with Tiernan McCann. I saw the dive in Croke Park, you see all the gel in the hair, he looks like, you know, this kind of towny fancy Dan, he's got the tan, he kind of was a character that I kind of had stereotyped rather than ever speaking to Tiernan McCann or knowing what he was like. As it turns out, he's one of the most down to earth GAA fellas you'll ever meet, real good thinker on the game, real salt of the earth sound fella, and he did a brilliant interview, and he was very honest about, you know, how the modern game has changed, how Tyrone play football, and some really interesting stuff about how Tyrone, about their tactics and how they approach different games.
It is. It sits me down to the ground, and we're playing games and training all the time. You know, it's just this class to be part of the team and been able to play like that. And it's not as if, you know, I'm going every single time. You can take a rest too, and there's other boys willing to do the same thing with so many adaptable players in the group that do that. But it's, I know I've heard recently in the media about the 15, the line out, you know, 3 full backs and the orthodox, that doesn't really exist anymore, and it's become a game now where there's just 15 poplars, you have a couple of men tagging, and you have a couple of finishers up front, and then there's a middle 8 or a middle 10 nearly now. So we've loads of players like that within our whole group, and even within Tyrone that are capable of playing, so I'm just lucky to be part of it at the minute, to be honest.
Yeah, and when you break, Tiernan, like, I mean, is your instructions to you to break whenever you have the energy to break, or who, you know, do you just decide based on how many other fellas are breaking, or you, do you know what way does that work with from your point of view?
I think you'd be foolish to think you can go every time.
Yeah,
because if you go every time, you might only last 10-15 minutes. So you have to pick and choose when to go, and in a way you can't be selfish in that you can't sit back all the time. Like if the likes of Niall Flodden and Kieran McGarry and Piggy Hart and Matty were involved in one move, then, you know, it's your time to really step up. I don't know, it just comes naturally, to be honest. We aren't given massive instruction, we just sort of go out and play, and that's being truthful. Sometimes we play play off the cuff like that, and you just go and try and express yourself. To be honest,
I think from looking at your tactics, like, and Sean Kavanagh said it after the game, it's usually keep it tight as possible in the first half, and then when the other team starts tiring, you know, the third quarter, like Sean said, that's kind of the way you the game will open up a little bit more, and then you're flooding forward, kind of able to overpower teams.
Yeah, the game always opens up like that. It might take 40 minutes, it might take 50, it might take 60. If you look at the Donegal Ulster final last year, it didn't really open up until the last 10. So
yeah,
it's not something we specifically target. We just know that at some stage things will open up and will help our purple patch, and that's when you really have to capitalise on that, and you have to pick off scores. And maybe in the past against maybe the likes of Mayo last year, that's where we've fallen back in those stages. We haven't picked up enough.
Yeah,
picked off enough scores.
But do you think, like, we've said this on the podcast, that against the likes of Mayo, you don't seem to commit as many bodies forwards. It's like you're a little bit conservative.
That's not intentional.
Right.
Higher the opposition, obviously, there's more men that need marked.
Yeah.
It's more dangerous for forward. So maybe we have three or four marking, and then there's only really maybe six or seven that can go if there's one or two up the field or whatever. That's not something deliberate, to be honest. It's hard to know why. We'll soon see now, going into the last eight, when we're playing top quality opposition, what way it'll work out.
Yeah, but I suppose that makes perfect sense. If the likes of Mayo like to leave four forwards up there, then they have to be marked, so less of you can break. You know, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Sometimes we play those teams, they're happy to keep three or four up. Not to use the word cheating, but you know, sometimes when a forward stays up, you can't.
Yeah.
Send 10 boys up the field and there's only four at the back and there's still five more players up. Not that that happens that regularly, but that's the sort of thing that you have to be wary of.
Yeah. Come here, you're working in Dublin and you're living in Dublin, in Santry now, is that right?
Yeah. Enjoying it down there. I don't see that much of it, but really I'm just there for work, and it's good to get out to the beach and stuff too. There's not enough work for pharmacists in the north. It's sort of a real overpopulated profession in the north. So all the northerners are going down for the work. But it's gone, suits well, and the travelling and all is good use to it. Like, to be honest, I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs today.
Are you saying to me it's a choice between Ed Sheeran and the GAA hour when you're driving to training?
Depends on mood, man. Ed's good for if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GAA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Interesting, lads, when you talk about, like, there's some over-analysis, and like you have lads like Jim McGuinness and stuff, who obviously was a very tactical manager, but sometimes when you read his Irish Times piece, you're thinking, Jesus Christ, what? Like, I mean, you know, I often think that maybe it's an Irish Times style, because like Gordon Darcy's piece on the rugby, while I do like an analytical pieces, I really enjoy tactical pieces, I could be halfway through Gordon Darcy's piece and the start of it I'm really into it, and then it just kind of gets so complicated that I find myself drifting off, and then I say I've forgotten the last paragraph, I'm just going to click out of this because this has gone too heavy for me and too long. But you know, I think when Tiernan McCann breaks it down and goes, right, we break, we're a counter-attacking team, I'll go once or twice, I'll be tired, but you can't dog it and stay back too long and do the defensive stuff. You have to help your teammates on the counter, and it's almost like, you know, having a football brain and having an understanding with your teammates that all you might have to do is make eye contact and you go, right, I'm done, help me out here. Yeah. And Tyrone just had that system down so well that they kind of knew when they were going, and a lot, because they were all hungry for work, they all never shirked going, and they never shirked the defensive responsibility. So like, it's interesting when you talk to Tiernan, and it may be not as scientific as, you know, you read the likes of Jim McGuinness's pieces, and you think, geez, has the game really moved on that far that I'm, you know, that it's gone that complicated?
Well, as
you
said, players who tag, players who finish, and 8 or 10 in the middle.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that
yeah.
was it, really. Like, although in Tyrone's case, I wouldn't even say that Mark Bradley was a finisher. He was just up top winning ball holes in the shape for them, so they probably
are
missing.
It was an outlet.
Yeah, they're probably missing players who finish, and then that middle 10 or whatever. But it was a great interview. But of course, one of the soundest men in GAA, as you say, is somebody who's talking openly about the GAA. Or we had to get that in there.
That was actually great that he listens to the GAA, a bit of Ed Sheeran and a bit of the GAA coming back from a train immediately. Then you'd hope that a lot of the players listen to the podcast, but there's not too much. Conor Cooney was on it and he was telling me he loves the podcast, and I was like, just wait, Conor, until we're on. This is going on before the interview started. Like, say it on during the interview.
Kev McKernan, remember, he was on 1 week, I think the week after, we were talking about his positioning, and he was referencing how wrong we were anyway about it the week before, but we didn't blow that up because he was talking about how wrong we were. But he's listening anyway.
Yeah, no, listen, it's good when the lads listen. You want people listening to it, there's no doubt, or you want the players listening to it. But then again, there's other players who don't listen to the media. You obviously know that. Like, that's what they don't listen, but we all know that they do read and listen.
Yet they say that they were written off by everybody come the end of the year. So.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Right, listen, we're going to leave you with this one. And this has put you all in a good mood for Christmas. It's me being put rightly in my place. And it was in the live show in Newbridge ahead of the Leinster final. And we had Willie McCreary on the show. Willie McCreary doesn't mince his words, lads. And Willie McCreary is a great midfielder for Kildare. He was ending his career around 98, 99. He played in 2001, I'm pretty sure. So he was coming towards the end. He was well into his 30s. I was a young whippersnapper, 19. It was only my second. It was only my second ever game. And this will tell you what a mouthpiece I was. You might think I'm a mouthpiece now. You should have seen me on the football fields when I was 18, 19, 20. It was absolute torment. But here's Willie getting his last laugh on me and my mountain.
Actually, I remember one day playing against you. And we were playing Leash. Was it the time the second year we beat them, or I can't think what it was, 98 or something. Yeah, it was 98, because we give you a fucking hammering. But I was going through, straight through the middle, and you were kind of half running after me. And Eddie was over on the far side, and I put up my hand, and he was about 40 yards away, and I said, I'll put up my hand, there's no fucking way he'll give it to me. And straight into the chest, it landed. And I got it at about the 14-yard line. By the time I was running that hard, I could see the Coley coming out, and he closed his eyes and put up his feet. I went to kick it, hit it with my knee, and dribbled wide. And you came over to me, something missed, Willie. You're gone. Right? 10 minutes later, who gets the curly finger? I go over and see you, Willie.
If I remember that, you wouldn't have been hit. You wouldn't be here tonight.
No,
it is very like something I would do. There's no doubt. And I did get the curly finger. Yeah. That's a classic.
So there you go, lads. I got the curly finger. There's no doubt about that. 10 minutes later, and Willie had his little word in my ear. And that'll tell you how stupid I was back then. You remember, you know that video that goes around about Nooks or Buckley, and Kildare people love throwing that back in my face. That was in that same game. I had a mare that day, because Eddie McCormack took me to the cleaners. It was my second senior game. Kildare were under Mick. They made the All-Ireland final that year. They were just a much better team than us, and we were getting destroyed in midfield. When you're getting destroyed in midfield, Eddie McCormack was getting on loads of ball. I was destroyed. So when you've nothing else, even the Nooks or Buckley thing, he's running through and goals, and I come in and I'm kind of put my wrong shoulder even to him and just get knocked down. And it was a disaster of a day, really, for Leash and for us. I think it was 13 points they ended up beating us by, but I'd forgotten that story from Willie McCreary.
I was listening to the GAA that night, and I couldn't see the clip that you're on about, so I went back and I found it. And let's just say it's no surprise that you said that the weights program didn't come in until under Liam Curran.
What were you doing? Why were you such a mouthpiece? You're a good forward, just win ball, score.
Actually wing back then. I was left half back. So I was kind of maybe a bit like Ricey McManaman, as in being this mouthpiece that might be, getting inside fellas' head. I just kind of enjoyed the. I enjoyed it.
Did you find that it worked?
No, I think as you go on, when I went into the forwards, I never would have initiated the trash talking. But if it was initiated, I would be right in. I enjoyed it. I just enjoyed. I just liked when someone give it back to you and you give it back to them, and you might get a score, put them in their place, then they're giving it to you.
Get lost in the game doing it then.
You do, when these altercations happen, and you know, you start them outing, and the worst thing that happens then, all your teammates start saying, "Wooly, come on, shut up."
Shut
and
up. I mean, like, yeah,
this helps me. This kind of gets me cross, and it gets me kind of into this game, and it gives me a point to prove. They would know this, but you still have these kind of do-gooders there. "Wooly, come on now." We, you know, I'm like, let's, you know what I'm like. You've played with me for 20 years. I've always been like this, and this helps me. Like, okay, I might get one free brought up or something, but it doesn't, that's like a small price to pay. I might score three, so like, you're still two up here.
Oh, but you're more from with the ref as well. Is that
players.
Well, if I was a player, I would be saying to you about that as well. Like, stop mouthing with the ref. Mouth all you want to them, boys. Yeah. I'll never stop you for that. Did you do research, or was it all based on what was happening?
No, it's based on them being shite, or not being a good player, or not being able to do something. Or like
being finished in McCreary's case.
Or being finished. Yeah. Being old was a good one for me. Like,
extended his career for 5 years after that game.
Anything at all that you could kind of slag someone about. But look, it's all schoolyard kind of stuff. But look, it was enjoyable. But listen, lads, that's all we have time for this year, for 2017. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed all the shows. And we'll be back. We're not going to cover the O'Byrne Cup again next year because we're protesting against these useless competitions. Not just the O'Byrne Cup, all these pre-seasons. So last year we ignored them, and this year we'll ignore them as well. But thankfully the league is starting up on the 29th. I think it's the 29th on that Saturday of January. So we'll be back with four shows a week on starting that Thursday. But we might give you a couple of shows in January if there's enough news going on. So listen, we'll talk to you then. Happy Christmas. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.